Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. With the largest selection of concrete and mortar in stock, we have the right mix specially formulated for your project. View our entire selection of concrete and mortar mixes online or in-store and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. This is a true crime in real time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
The floodgates didn't just open, they exploded. It started with one lawsuit. One woman, a high-profile accuser, stepping forward to say Sean Diddy Combs had abused her, and within 24 hours, he cut a check and settled it out of court. That was supposed to be the end of it. The payout was supposed to make it go away. But instead, it sent up a flare. A signal to anyone who had ever been harmed by Diddy, or thought they had a claim, that there might be a massive payday waiting. Then came the hotline. A simple 1-800 number, plastered on social media ads, running across Facebook, Instagram, even showing up in news coverage. The question was simple. Were you or a loved one sexually abused by Sean Combs? If so, press 1. And so they did, by the thousands. The response was immediate and overwhelming. Within a week, the hotline received 12,000 calls. By the time things really got rolling, 26,000 people had reached out. That's a number so big, so ridiculous, that even the lawyers handling the intake had to step back and take a breath. Were there really thousands of people who had been victimized by Diddy? Or was this just the natural result of throwing a wide net into murky waters? Because here's the reality. Hotlines like this attract everything. Real victims, opportunists, people who got a weird vibe from him at a party once, and, of course, pure grifters. That's where Reciprocity Industries comes in. A Montana-based call center, of all places, that suddenly found itself at the center of one of the biggest celebrity sex abuse lawsuits in history. Their job? To sort through the chaos and figure out what's real and what's a bad script from a bad actor. Now keep in mind, this isn't some random office with a few paralegals flipping through emails. This is a legal processing machine, the same kind used in big pharmaceutical lawsuits, clergy abuse scandals, even the Boy Scouts case. It's designed to handle high-volume claims and funnel them to attorneys like a factory line for litigation. Out of 26,000 contacts, Reciprocity determined that about 600 claims were worth looking at. From there, only 200 made the final cut. 200 people whose allegations were strong enough to be taken to court, which means the vast majority, some 98% of those initial calls, were either irrelevant, unverifiable, or outright nonsense. That's the messy side of mass tort cases. And it's exactly what Diddy's defense team is latching onto. Enter Tony Busby, a high-powered Texas lawyer with a flair for theatrics and a history of winning massive settlements. If you followed the Deshaun Watson sexual misconduct lawsuits, you know Busby's playbook. He thrives on public pressure, big media moments, and high-profile cases. And make no mistake, he wants a war with Diddy. Busby has already filed almost 40 lawsuits against Combs, and he says there are more coming. Each one a separate legal battle, each plaintiff claiming they were drugged, assaulted, or manipulated into sex by Combs. Some of them were allegedly minors at the time. Diddy's response? The gloves are off. His legal team is calling this a money grab. They argue that the flood of lawsuits isn't proof of guilt. It's proof that ambulance-chasing lawyers can create an industry out of weaponizing allegations. They point to how the claims are being gathered, rather than their substance. The hotline, the Facebook ads, the AI-generated images used to promote the lawsuits, they argue it's all part of a manufactured cash grab. And they've already started punching holes in some of the cases. Take the most explosive claim, the woman who alleged that Diddy and Jay-Z raped her when she was 13 at an MTV afterparty. That lawsuit made headlines instantly. But then, it fell apart. The accuser couldn't back up her timeline. She named a musician she had allegedly spoken to that night, but that artist was on tour in another state. Her father, who she claimed picked her up afterward, said he had no memory of such an event. Under pressure, she withdrew her lawsuit. Diddy's attorneys seized on that like a shark in the water. They immediately pointed to it as proof that the whole case was built on shaky claims, that the lawsuits are full of inconsistencies and that many of the accusers are just trying to cash in. And honestly, they might not be wrong about some of them. In mass tort cases, false claims always creep in. That's just a fact. When there's money on the table and a defendant with deep pockets, some people will take a shot. But that doesn't mean every case is false. And that's the real danger for Diddy. Here's the biggest risk for Combs. Even if 98% of claims are nonsense, he only needs one to stick. One credible accuser with real evidence can take him down. And Busby knows this. His entire strategy is built around volume. File so many lawsuits that Combs has to either fight dozens of cases at once or settle. Either way, Busby wins. And let's be clear, Combs is in a uniquely bad position to fight this, because on top of the civil lawsuits, he's also facing federal sex trafficking charges in New York. His criminal trial is set for May 2025. That means he's fighting for his freedom in one courtroom while fighting for his fortune in another. If he loses in federal court, these civil lawsuits become open and shut cases. If he's convicted of sex trafficking, the plaintiffs in the mass tort can say, look, he's already been found guilty, pay up. On the flip side, if Combs somehow beats the criminal charges, his legal team will try to use that momentum to fight the civil suits. They'll argue that the entire narrative was false, that the accusers, the hotline, the lawsuits were all part of an opportunistic attack. Either way, this isn't ending anytime soon. The lawyers are dug in, the lawsuits are piling up. And Sean Combs, a man who built an empire on being untouchable, is finally realizing that the walls are closing in. Because even if he beats every lawsuit, even if he dodges prison, the damage is already done. His name is permanently linked to one of the biggest sexual abuse scandals in music history. His reputation, his businesses, his legacy, it's all on fire. And the fire isn't going out anytime soon. Now, the real question is, how do you separate the real cases from the fake? Because if there really was a Diddy abuse call center, a factory of lawsuits, how do we know which ones hold water? And how does the legal system handle a tidal wave of allegations against one man? Mass torts are not new. They've been around for decades, long before Sean Combs' name was ever attached to one. But what makes this different is who it's targeting. Mass torts are typically used against corporations, pharmaceutical giants, chemical manufacturers, religious institutions, not individual celebrities, not like this. A mass tort is exactly what it sounds like. A large-scale legal assault where many people, often hundreds or even thousands, file lawsuits against a single defendant over the same type of harm. Unlike a class action, where one lawsuit represents an entire group of victims, a mass tort keeps every lawsuit separate. Each plaintiff has their own lawyer, their own story, their own case. So why choose mass tort over a class action? Simple, money. In a class action, the payout is typically divided among all the plaintiffs. One big settlement gets chopped up into 1,000 little pieces. In a mass tort, each case can lead to its own settlement. If the defendant loses one case, the rest become much harder to fight. It's death by 1,000 cuts. Each case a separate wound, bleeding the defendant dry. It's been done before. The Boy Scouts of America faced 82,000 sexual abuse claims in a mass tort that eventually led to a $2.46 billion settlement fund. The Catholic Church has spent over $5 billion settling abuse cases across multiple dioceses. In both of those cases, survivors came forward decades later, often because of newly passed laws that allowed them to sue despite expired statutes of limitations. Then there's Big Tobacco, sued for knowingly selling a product that caused millions of deaths. They settled for a record-breaking $206 billion. And then there's the Deshaun Watson lawsuits, the closest thing to a celebrity version of what's happening to Combs. Watson, the NFL quarterback, faced 24 separate lawsuits from women alleging sexual misconduct during massage sessions. Those lawsuits, all filed individually, created an overwhelming legal storm that eventually led to a confidential mass settlement. The strategy worked. Watson never saw a courtroom, but he paid. This is why Combs is in dangerous territory. The lawsuits aren't lumped together. There's no single settlement that makes them all go away. Each one is its own battle, and if he loses just one, it legitimizes the others. Which is why screening out the real claims from the fake ones is so important. The process starts with intake. Reciprocity Industries, the Montana-based call center, is where all the claims begin. This isn't some law office with high-powered attorneys fielding phone calls. This is a legal processing operation, the kind that's been used in pharmaceutical lawsuits, insurance claims, even FEMA disaster relief applications. The goal is volume. Find as many potential cases as possible, then weed out the bad ones before they ever make it to court. The process starts the same way for everyone. A scripted questionnaire that asks callers to walk through their allegations step by step. What happened? When did it happen? Where? Who else was there? Was there anyone they told at the time? Any medical records, police reports, text messages, or photos that could support their claim? This is where a lot of calls die immediately. If someone's story doesn't make sense, if they contradict themselves, or if their timeline falls apart, the case never moves forward. Then there's database checking. Every claim is entered into a centralized system. If someone calls twice and gives two different versions of their story, they're flagged. If someone matches details from another accuser in a way that sounds rehearsed, they're flagged. If their story can't be verified in any way, they're flagged. After that, it's follow-ups and deeper vetting. That's where things get serious. At this stage, trained investigators, often former law enforcement officers, go through the claims and look for patterns. Do multiple people describe the same behavior? Do their timelines match up? Do they mention the same locations, the same parties, the same witnesses? Because here's the reality. Predators have patterns. If 10 different people who have never met describe the same thing happening in the same way, that's hard to ignore. Out of 26,000 calls and messages, only about 600 claims survived this initial process. Out of those, only 200 were deemed strong enough to be sent to attorneys for litigation. That means the vast majority of the claims, some 98% of the original contacts, were either irrelevant, unverifiable, or completely bogus. Which, of course, is exactly what Diddy's defense team is now using against them. The legal and ethical debate around mass torts has been going on for decades. For plaintiff's attorneys, these cases are about justice. They argue that without mass torts, many survivors of abuse would never have their day in court. That these lawsuits force powerful people to be held accountable. That if there are dozens of people telling the same story, it's not a coincidence. For defense attorneys, it's a shakedown. They call it plaintiff farming, using mass advertising to scoop up as many claimants as possible, hoping to scare defendants into massive settlements. And they hate how these cases are built. Mass tort lawyers don't just wait for victims to come forward, they go out and find them. Social media campaigns, TV commercials, radio ads. Have you or a loved one suffered abuse? Call now. The Sean Combs hotline was a perfect example. It was plastered all over the internet, on Facebook, Instagram, even showing up in AI-generated ads designed to look like news reports. Defense lawyers argue that this creates false victims, that if you tell people over and over again that they might be entitled to money, some will convince themselves they were victims. Others will outright lie, hoping to cash in. And here's where it gets tricky, because they're not entirely wrong. In mass tort cases, false claims are inevitable. When the Boy Scouts of America was hit with 82,000 sexual abuse lawsuits, their insurance companies pushed back hard, arguing that a significant percentage of claims were fraudulent. Some people who filed lawsuits had no connection to the Boy Scouts at all. Others filed multiple claims under different names. That's why Combs' attorneys are already setting the stage to challenge the credibility of his accusers. They're talking about the flood of false claims. They're threatening counter lawsuits against anyone who files a fraudulent case. They're highlighting the cases that have already collapsed, using them to cast doubt on everything else. And that's their best play. They don't have to disprove every claim, they just have to prove that enough of them are weak to make all of them look questionable. But the real question isn't about the weakest cases, it's about the strongest ones. Because somewhere in that 200 cases sent to litigation, there are real accusers with real evidence. And if those cases hold up in court, no amount of PR spin is going to save Sean Combs. Because at the end of the day, this isn't just about how these lawsuits were gathered. It's about what's in them. And we're about to find out. If Sean Combs is convicted in federal court, everything changes. Right now, he's fighting a two-front war. Criminal charges that could put him away for life, and a mass tort civil case that's already battering his public image. But those two battles are connected. If the federal case ends in a conviction, the civil lawsuits become nearly impossible to fight. A criminal conviction is the golden ticket for plaintiffs in civil court. The burden of proof is much higher in a criminal case. Prosecutors have to convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. In civil court, though, the standard is much lower. A preponderance of the evidence. Which basically means, is it more likely than not that the defendant did what he's accused of? If a jury decides beyond a reasonable doubt that Combs sexually trafficked women, then every one of those civil suits against him gains instant credibility. No longer will plaintiffs have to prove that Combs was an abuser. The federal conviction will have already done that. The only fight left in civil court will be how much he has to pay. And that's where the money really starts adding up. Because mass tort settlements aren't about whether the abuse happened, they're about how much each survivor is owed. The Boy Scouts of America had to set aside billions to settle lawsuits. The Catholic Church paid more than $5 billion in sexual abuse settlements over the years. Even Deshaun Watson, who never saw the inside of a criminal courtroom, had to quietly settle nearly all his cases once the weight of public pressure became too much. If Combs is found guilty in federal court, there will be no reason for him to keep fighting the civil lawsuits. He'll have no leverage, no plausible deniability, nothing. He would have to start writing checks or risk seeing every case go to trial, where damages could be far greater. But what if he's acquitted? That's when things get messy. If Combs beats the federal case, he gets a massive legal weapon against the civil suits. His lawyers will argue, if the U.S. government, with all of its investigators, FBI agents, and legal firepower, couldn't prove these allegations in court, then how can these lawsuits hold up? It wouldn't automatically erase the civil suits, but it would severely weaken them. And more than that, it would give Combs a public relations counterattack. Right now, he's on the defensive, denying everything while the lawsuits pile up. But an acquittal would allow him to flip the script, to go after his accusers, their lawyers, and even the entire mass tort process itself. He could argue that the entire effort was a money grab, fueled by greedy attorneys and sensationalist media coverage. He could even try to sue back. If Combs gets acquitted and proves that some of the lawsuits against him were false or exaggerated, he could start filing defamation suits against his accusers and their lawyers. It's a long shot, and defamation suits are notoriously hard to win. But in the world of legal warfare, countersuing is often more about sending a message than actually winning. His lawyers could also push for sanctions against attorneys they believe filed frivolous claims, trying to discourage other potential lawsuits. It wouldn't make all the cases disappear, but it could scare off weaker claims. The bottom line is simple. A conviction buries him. An acquittal gives him ammunition to fight back. But either way, the civil lawsuits will not go away overnight. So the real question is, does Combs settle? Historically, mass tort cases don't end with dramatic courtroom victories. They end with settlements, massive, sweeping payouts that resolve dozens or even hundreds of cases at once. The Boy Scouts, the Catholic Church, and major corporations like Johnson & Johnson have all used huge settlement funds to put abuse claims behind them. Even Harvey Weinstein's former company created a settlement fund to compensate victims after his crimes became public. So why doesn't Combs just do the same? Because settling means admitting defeat. If he starts writing checks, it doesn't matter whether he publicly denies wrongdoing, he'll be seen as guilty in the court of public opinion. And for someone like Combs, whose career was built on power, dominance, and control, that kind of image collapse is hard to accept. There's also the question of who actually pays. Most celebrities have liability insurance that covers lawsuits. But insurance companies aren't charities. They don't just hand out money because someone's famous. They have to determine whether the claims fall within the policy's coverage and, more importantly, how much of the payout they're willing to cover. In past celebrity lawsuits, insurance companies have fought back against covering settlements, arguing that sexual misconduct isn't something they're required to pay for. If Combs is convicted of sex trafficking, his insurance providers will likely deny coverage altogether, arguing that the lawsuits stem from criminal activity, which means he'd be paying out of pocket. And that's a big problem for Combs. Despite his status as one of hip-hop's wealthiest figures, a long string of lawsuits could drain his fortune faster than people realize. Lawsuits aren't just about verdicts. They're about legal fees, court costs, and settlement negotiations that can stretch on for years. Even if Combs is worth hundreds of millions, mass litigation can eat away at that quickly. That's why many celebrities settle. Not because they're admitting guilt, but because the financial and legal drain is too much to handle. So if Combs doesn't settle, he better be ready for years of legal battles, constant media scrutiny, and the risk of more evidence surfacing as lawsuits drag on. But this case isn't just about Diddy. It's about what happens next. This is a test case for the future of mass torts against celebrities. Up until now, mass torts have mostly been used against institutions and corporations. But if this lawsuit is successful, it could set a precedent, one that makes it easier for groups of accusers to file coordinated lawsuits against wealthy individuals. That means we could see more celebrities targeted in mass litigation efforts, especially in the wake of the hashtag MeToo. If a single high-profile lawsuit can ignite a wave of mass tort claims, it gives victims a new path to justice. But it also creates new challenges for how the legal system handles these cases. There's already talk of changing the laws around how mass torts are advertised and recruited. Critics argue that social media campaigns and hotlines can encourage false claims and turn lawsuits into public spectacles. If Combs' legal team is able to prove that many of the lawsuits were baseless, it could lead to tighter restrictions on legal advertising, perhaps even new legislation, to regulate how law firms recruit plaintiffs. On the other hand, if these lawsuits result in major payouts, it could embolden more victims to come forward in future cases, knowing that mass torts can hold powerful figures accountable. Either way, the Diddy lawsuits will change the game. For Combs, the future is clear: fight, pay, or lose everything. For the legal system, it's an open question. Does this case represent justice or a dangerous new frontier in celebrity lawsuits? Either way, one thing is certain. This isn't just a scandal. It's a legal experiment, one that will determine how the next generation of celebrity lawsuits plays out.
She was the perfect wife, always smiling, always supportive. A pillar of the community, beloved by friends, adored by family, and secretly researching undetectable poisons in her spare time. Maybe it was the way he chewed. Maybe she just got bored. Or maybe, just maybe, she had been planning this since the honeymoon. But if he had just paid attention, if he had just known what to look for, if he had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and learned the red flags, he could have heard every episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Ad-free, and before everyone else, he could have seen it coming. Instead, he's 6 feet under, and she's shopping for husband number two. Don't be like him. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.